We're back 36 minutes after 11 o'clock, our Mellow Joy Coffee Tom. My pleasure to welcome back to the show Richard Hebert, Hebert's Garden Center, without a big box of plants today.
That's right. I scurried over here, Jeff.
I appreciate it. I know business sometimes gets in the way, and happy to have you when we can.
Yeah, and so I think spring is sprung. We're getting to the 40s next week, which isn't bad, you know, for most things. And there are a few things you got to watch. Vinca is the biggest one that gives us trouble when we get into these low cool temperatures. And, of course, I'll talk a little bit later, the lawns, that's an issue for people who fertilized early. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But right now I want to talk about Cajun hibiscus.
Cajun hibiscus.
Cajun hibiscus.
And you put this, hot sauce on it? What?
Put a little hot sauce. You can put hot sauce on anything. But actually, these are hybridized hibiscus that were actually done by the DuPonts over there in the city of Plaquemine. And it is really the way they actually have sold some of the rights to different growers. But we get them directly from the DuPonts themselves in Plaquemine. And they have some absolutely unique colors and variations. I see you pulled it up online. And any of the listeners, if you look up Cajun hibiscus, it will show you some. I mean, we got our first huge load. We must have maybe close to 200 Cajun hibiscus, different varieties. And it is just the if you want something different and unique or as a gift, it is worthwhile doing. Now, they are very cold sensitive, so they're more cold sensitive than a traditional hibiscus. But to me, Jeff, that is one you'd want to put in a container, and so you can enjoy them on the patio. It's just not something that you want them to get lost in the yard, you know, whereas some of the traditional hibiscus are very, very pretty. Hibiscus in general are very pretty. But this, if you want something different, unique, the size of the blooms can be it's just different sizes, different colors, different shapes. And the best way to describe it is unique. There's no one color that I say is better than the other because they have blues, they have reds. And they're not always available, but we were able to we're pretty good. We sell a lot of Cajun hibiscus, and so we got a good selection that just came in, and he kind of pushes some of the more unique varieties our way when he can, and he did this time. So it's just it's looking for something different. Patio pot does great. Keep in mind when it comes to hibiscus, you need more sun than shade, so you don't want to put them in a, you know, under a patio with an overhang that doesn't get a lot of sun. But if you can put them in a situation where, if you put them in a container and they get all morning sun to maybe 1 or 2 o'clock, that would be ideal. But they will take all day sun, but you just got to be careful in terms of them drying out. The only other thing you got to worry about is they're heavy feeders. So hibiscus, once a month you want to be putting down a granulated fertilizer. You can supplement with liquids, and that will help also. And but it's definitely worth a look-see. And we got all the other hibiscus also. Keep in mind, like I said earlier, hibiscus are tropicals, so they can freeze. And this is the most cold sensitive of them. They can get knocked out at, you know, 27, 26 degrees if it's sustained for any amount of time. So you want to be able to protect these, but it's worth just starting a few. And some people actually have many, many different varieties.
Very cool. Yeah, and I saw on that website a ton of varieties.
Oh, a ton of varieties. Yeah. There's literally hundreds of varieties of the Cajun hibiscus.
Very cool.
I want to jump really quick to lawns because, you know, people are coming in now, Jeff, and this was the reason I try to tell people to wait. Temperatures, I think, mid-40s to lower-40s next week.
The coolest I saw were like 44.
Okay, so
Monday into Tuesday, I think.
Right, and so anything that's really has just broken out dormancy and you fertilize it, that growth is really, really tender. Not so much that it's going to freeze or frost, because that's not going to happen at 44, okay? However, that tender growth is much more susceptible to that disease. We're always talking about brown patch, which is little brown circles. So by promoting that grass too early, you're going to be much more susceptible to the brown patch. And so that's why you want to kind of wait. So what we've been telling people, especially over the last 4 or 5 days, said, hey, don't do it this weekend, but wait till next weekend. And if next weekend the long-range forecast over the next 10 or 14 days is relatively warm, then we're good to go. But there's no real rush on it. And so people have been attacking the lawn several different ways. And, you know, if you had a lot of weeds, we always recommend spraying for those weeds. And so you could have done that earlier with no issues in terms of the lawn. And so if you don't have a lot of weeds at this point, then you can just use a straight lawn food plus iron. The iron will give you a darker green color. The high nitrogen will give you fresh, lush growth. And we recommend pretty much everybody should really look into seriously fertilizing this year simply because of the amount of damage that was done to the lawns last summer into the fall. It was just one of the toughest years for lawns that I've seen in a long time. And and so people just but now's the time to try to get it to come back. So a lot of it is coming back. It just needs a little spurring on, a little help. And so I would do it more than once this year. Normally we say, hey, do it once in the spring. If it's happy, then you're good to go. It's probably going to take a couple different ones. And it's going to be at least a month apart. So let's say you did yours April 1st. You'd want to do it again in mid to early May again. And on that, the last one, you got to be careful that you always do it during a wet period. Not as critical this time of year, Jeff. People are always worried about, you know, does I have to wait right before rain? And that's not true because the temperatures aren't as extreme. Now, you wouldn't want to, if for some reason it's really dry, then no, you'd want to wait for rain. But this time of year is just not hot enough to cause a problem. So as long as you put the fertilizer application, roughly according to the square footage that's on the bag, then you'll be fine even though we didn't get a rain. The ground's wet enough that it's just not going to be an issue. Now, that next one, you want to be careful because temperatures usually by May are starting to get into the upper 80s and 90s, and they can be. So you want to – that's where you want to be more – say, look, I'm just going to wait for a good rain and then put it out, or, you know, if you're 100% sure we're going to get it, you can do it right before. But either way, you want to make sure that ground is somewhat wet.
Okay.
I'm starting to see a tremendous amount of crabgrass issues, more than normal, and it doesn't surprise me. And that's simply because the crabgrass did great last year, and the lawns didn't. So the crabgrass, anytime you get an opening, they shoot that seed stalk, they spread those seeds all over the place, and since the grass was so weak, and you're not going to start to see the crabgrass issue till right about now when the soil temperatures start to warm up and they start to sprout. And it's only going to get worse as it gets warm. So for the first time ever, there's one now that you can actually spray the lawns that will kill the crabgrass and not hurt the lawns, which is very unusual. And so that can be applied. And you could apply a pre-emergent earlier that would have helped you. But at this point, you want to kind of attack that. And the other one that we saw a lot of, Jeff, and everybody sees is the clovers. And, you know, that's pretty normal. And those are easy to get rid of if you want to just spray it.
They don't last that long, though, do they?
They don't. And Bob, if it's a normal spring, middle to the end of April, they'll be pretty much done as temperatures go. And, you know, I really don't mind it.
I don't either. I love, especially if the breeze brings about their fragrance. I can like them.
And something kind of interesting about the clovers, Jeff. The clovers are a legume, and that's a segment of a category of a plant is a legume. And legumes actually take nitrogen out of the air and pull it into the plant. And so sometimes what you'll see where you have a big patch of clover, when the grass starts coming out and the clover dies, you'll see and you didn't fertilize, you'll see the grass in that area actually be a darker green than in the other areas. And that's strictly because they put the nitrogen back in the soil. Mm. And that's old Mother Nature doing that. So I guess if you didn't want to fertilize, you could plant clover all over your yard, and it would fertilize the lawn for you. That'd be another issue there too. But it does provide a little bit of benefit to the grass, and but bottom line, most people want to try to get rid of it. I don't mind it. I like the looks of it, and like you're saying, Jeff, it's gonna play out as time goes on. And back to the lawns, and you always want to use something, especially coming off the year we came off, something high in nitrogen, slow release preferable, and high iron, and that's gonna it's more than nitrogen than anything, because the nitrogen is gonna promote vegetative growth, and that's what you want right now. You want to try to push that grass to try to fill in where it was beaten up so bad. So high nitrogen, the iron is strictly to darken it up, but I think more critical than anything is high nitrogen. The slow release is important only because it doesn't there's less chance of burning by over application. So the slow release helps you from that standpoint. It also helps you from the grass will pick up more of it. I mean, years ago, they used to have ammonium nitrate, which is all nitrogen. Now, ammonium nitrate is hard to – you can't buy that anymore because that's what they make the dang bombs out of. But there's other ones. There's 3300 that are much safer, but they're not slow release. And so you just want to be careful. If you do it, you want to make darn sure that you you apply it based on square footage, and that will help you.
All right.
Switch now to vegetables, Jeff. Everybody's in full gear when it comes to planting the vegetables. We're selling, a tremendous amount of all the different varieties of plants, and people are trying to get a good start. And I know we're getting to the 40s, but really and truly, that is a non-issue. The only thing that's going to be an issue for, and people got to watch, are things such as cucumbers, watermelon, cantaloupe, and okra, and squash. And it's not so much the temperature, although it is the temperature, it's going to be the wind, and it just affects those more than anything. But the ones that people plant the most of, which are going to be tomatoes and peppers and eggplant, the mid-40s is a non-issue. You know, I guess lower 40s, sometimes you'd have to watch for a frost if the conditions are right. But really that usually happens when we get to the, into the 30s. So I don't foresee any issue when it comes to the vegetables, other than cucumbers, squash, cantaloupe, and melons, and that's early, and okra. Mm-hmm. If you plant okra, it's gonna shut that thing down. Like we talked about in the past, you just can wait on that okra to make it go. But jumping to specifically some of the tomatoes. Obviously, tomatoes is the number one planted vegetable in the country. Everybody wants to do it. Whether you eat them or not, it's a challenge.
Where's this debate again? Fruit or vegetable?
You're right. That's right. That's more of a scientific debate, and so I'm not going to get into that. But I'm calling it a vegetable because that's enough. What everybody calls it, and that's how it's categorized in the grocery store. So we'll go with that.
Okay.
But we got so many different types of tomatoes, and I think it's a good thing because people use tomatoes in so many different ways. And starting from your basic large tomato. And then in that category, you have two, well, you have actually more than that, but in terms of growing, you have the determinate and indeterminate, which we talk about a lot. The determinate ones will stay short. So people ask us a lot about that. And so we'll always ask them, how much space do you have? You know, is it in rows? Are you doing containers? And if they say, I'm doing the raised bed, we generally try to steer them toward a determinate variety because it's going to stay smaller. So you can put more, and it won't get as full within those small planting areas. So determinate varieties will stay smaller, and then within that category you also have the better tasting one, which we also talk about, the heirlooms, the old ones, and then you have the hybrid, right? And you should always mix them up. The better tasting one, the old heirlooms will have the best taste but the least production, so kind of mix that up. But also, Jeff, you have cherry tomatoes. I mean, it used to be pretty simple. You'd have a cherry tomato and you'd have one type, sweet 100s or actually sweet 100 and sweet millions. Now you have a lot of different varieties, but to the good part of this is that some of these varieties are so much better tasting than some of the older ones, or sweeter. And I
don't know if it is that. I mean, I wouldn't eat tomatoes as a kid. And then in the early 80s, I started eating them with Mexican food, but now I like them in a whole lot of things.
Absolutely.
I never did before.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, Jeff. I would eat them. I never not eat them, but boy, I appreciate tomatoes now more than I ever did. And so you have the cherries, but within the cherries, you got a multitude of varieties, and all I'm saying is a lot of people come in for that old variety, but it's worth it to try some of the new ones, even just one or two. But the cherry, well, I'll produce all of them. But then now you also have the grape tomato, which is another one. It's kind of like between a cherry and an Italian, Viva Italian Roma tomato. It's a little bit smaller, about a little bit elongated, about the size of a grape, maybe a little bit bigger, but that's a really good tomato also. The good news for the listeners is that those cherries and those grape tomatoes are easier to keep producing than some of the bigger tomatoes. So people who've had trouble, because tomatoes can be challenging.
Do they, because they're lighter, even though there's probably more on each plant, mm-hmm. I'm guessing?
Yes, there is.
Does it weigh it down in a different way, or?
Not really. They'll still need support.
Okay.
They'll need support. So I don't think it's that. I think it's more to do with, for whatever reason, the other ones have a tendency to get more disease issues. It's not so much an insect issue as it is a disease issue. And so I tell people always, you know, try to plant a few of those other ones so that you have a little backup, and they will extend. And many times the cherry tomatoes will go all summer long, and the grape tomatoes will go all summer long, where the other ones will play out, after it starts getting really, really hot. Usually by the end of June, you're pretty much done with those big tomatoes, whereas those other ones will just keep producing, and it's plenty of them. So kind of keep that in mind when it comes to, if you've always struggled with it, plant something like that, and those will go great in containers also and be a non-issue.
Very good.
When it comes to, I know I mentioned it before, but the big bell pepper, who people had trouble growing bell pepper, the one that does the best, it's a newer hybrid called Aristotle, and that thing, and Jeff, I have the advantage of getting the feedback from my customers. So, you know, what the growers tell us, we pass on to the customer. But really what I believe when the customer comes back the next year and said, give me some more of those Aristotle, yeah. Those did outstanding. And so years ago we had, you know, California Wonder was the go-to bell pepper. And then starting in the late 90s and early 2000s, they started to struggle. People would come and say, man, my bell peppers didn't do well. And sure enough, they came up with these new hybrids. But Aristotle is a beautiful shaped traditional bell pepper that just doesn't have the issues. I'm not sure if it's because maybe they set the pollination is higher, the temperature can be higher, and they'll still set the pepper itself. I'm not sure, but they just produce better under more adverse conditions than the old varieties. Mm. And of course, you have still people swear and say, look, Big Bertha and Emerald Giant. There's other varieties that do well also. But if you want a basic size pepper, as the old traditional Aristotle is the go-to, and it performs very, very well. Don't get too rushed, Jeff. We talked about okra, but the cowpeas and all that, people coming in for cowpeas, they should be coming in this week, and that's cowpeas, it's purple hull, black eyes,
okay.
And all those type field peas.
I don't think I've heard that term before.
Yeah, field. I guess most people refer to it as field peas, and. You know, there's hundreds of varieties of different types of field peas.
But cowpeas.
Cowpeas.
That's...
It's a field pea.
I had never heard of that.
Yeah. And, but again, those are mostly planted in April when the ground temperature warms up and they perform well. And they can take, there's the ones like the okra, you can plant it late and they'll still set the bean when temperatures get hot and not have a problem. Jeff, let's see. I had to rush over here, so I couldn't prepare. But I think basically that's it. I think we're in full swing in terms of product selection, and everything is blooming in the landscape. A lot of azaleas.
I've been noticing over the last week or so, things really greening up downtown.
Exactly. So we're starting to get a feel for maybe what didn't make it and what didn't make it. But I think a lot of things that people may have assumed were dead, will start to sprout in the next week or two. And give it some time, especially the more in the shade that this plant may have been that you're worried about, the longer it's going to take for it to come up, for the ground has to warm up. And so usually the things that are in more sun will start to re-sprout faster than things are in dense shade. But you still got time to kind of wait and see what's going on. But the azaleas are blooming, Jeff. The Japanese magnolias are blooming. I've seen some red buds blooming in the landscape, as well as the maple trees. You remember,
and the bracts are turning red on my poinsettia.
On your poinsettia.
So that's a sure sign of spring.
That's a sign of spring and no more winter, I think.
Yeah,
isn't that it?
I would hope.
Uh-huh. And so we'll see. And but it's a great time of year, and I've always appreciated spring.
All right. Richard, always appreciate your coming by on these Thursdays at about this time. We'll look forward to the next time.
Thank you, Jeff.